Session number 16724, Ernest Taylor, Reel 1.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Taylor?
I was born in Sunderland, Woodbine Street, in Hendon, in Sunderland.
Your date of birth?
On the 15th of the 1st, 1920. And I was there just till I was about 6 years old, and I went first of all to Hudson Road School, and then when I was about six, we moved up to Cameron's Brewery, where my father was a foreman. We lived in the firm's house. And then eventually I went up from there. I had a transfer from that school. First was too far to go on. I was at Green Terrace and Cowan Terrace schools, which were in Sunderland then. Green Terrace was the juniors. Cowan Terrace was the seniors, you know. And it was a pretty decent school as well. That was a good school.
How many was in the family?
In the family, it was a brother, one brother and two sisters. That was like two boys and two girls. And
where did you come in that number?
Well, I was the third. I was the third eldest. There was a sister younger than me, and my mother died when we were. I was eight, and my sister was just about eight and a half or something. My sister was seven, and my elder sister, she was 16, I think, nearly at the time. She had to come from work, and from then on she brought us up, till she was about 20. My father, well, as I say, we lived in this brewery house and she brought us up.
What was the house like?
It was a big house, but we were just on the upstairs part of it, you see, and it was built in the brewery, and we could go downstairs into the brewery yard, which was convenient. My father was opening up and things like that. And it was really just an ordinary street living with works and living accommodation, you know, and the old-fashioned neighbours and that. But we were right at the bottom, living in this brewery, and I think they thought we were a little bit higher than them because there were ordinary people at the top, but we weren't, we'd just come from an ordinary background. But it was a foreman sort of style, and we rent-free, coal-free, things like that. But the great neighbourhood.
Was it a comfortable life at home?
It wasn't really. It's the fact being that when my mother died, it went a little bit. We had to depend upon my elder sister for cooking and all that. And my father was devoted really to my mother, but I think he let himself go a little bit to the end. But still, I got to know different people, neighbours and that. And there was one particular neighbour in the next street, actually. They very nearly brought me up from when I was 12 years old. I met them and I sort of adopted family, but I still lived at home. But they kept us on the straight and narrow, you know. And my sister, my eldest sister, the one that brought us up, she's still alive now. She's 81 now. And she's the youngest sister died at 50-odd. My brother, remember, he left home. Well, you know, when the slump was on, he was about 16. And he went down to London, got a job. And a couple of times he'd been destitute. You know, he'd got a job and then he was out of work. And my father had bailed him out, buying down for him a couple of times. And brought him back, but he still went back. And he, at present, we've tried to get in touch with him. We can't get in touch with him at all. We don't know whether he's alive or dead now. And I've never seen him about 20-odd years since I got married. Met him there down London, but he ceased to communicate since then. And we've tried to find him. So there's only like me and my elder sister. She lives up in Prudhoe, which is long way off, so I just get up to see her about every 6 weeks or something like that, just to see if she's okay, because she lives in her own, she's a widow now.
When you were young, were you all right? Food, clothing, was it plentiful?
Well, it was for us, because my mother, actually she was, she used to do a lot of dressmaking herself. But I remember, we were pretty well shod and everything, but I remember kids in the same street, just on the opposite side, they used to go to school with bare feet. They went to, not to Cowan Terrace, I don't think it would have been allowed at Cowan Terrace, but a near school, Bishop Waymo, or Rectory Park as it was known then, they used to go to school bare feet, barefooted. Well, then, at that time, later on, the school boots came out, and you used to get free boots from the school. But everybody knew who had the school boots, because there weren't any toe caps, you know. And they used to kid each other and, you know, scuff each other, but, oh, look, he's got this. He can't speak to anybody since he got the school boots, you know, as if he was a snob-like. But, and the same ones, as I say, they used to play football and all sorts of bare feet. When they used to come from school, the first thing they did was take the boots up and put them behind the front door of the, you know, the communal front door, and come out in their bare feet, because they'd been used to having bare feet for so long. We'd make the feet sore. Didn't have socks to put on, I don't suppose. But was that sort of community. But we were close knit in these couple of streets where we were. And everybody helped each other, you know.
What kind of leisure activities did you have as a child?
Well, all made on our own, such as kick the tin, deliver, all street, you know, street gangs and paper balls. That street, port this street, paper balls on the string and hoops, bogies, all sorts, and marbles. But we used to go to the, we used to go, summer holidays, it was regular, but go away either to the Mowbray Park, which was called the Duck Park. Your mother would give you a bottle of water and a few slices of bread for the ducks, or a sandwich for yourself, like a bad one, bottle of water. Pardon me. That was day. And then other days, we would go from Sunderland, walk to Claydon or Borden. They called it Borden Flats. It was like marshy ground. We used to go for tadpoles and frogs in the jar, carry them all the way back on the end of a stick. It was a long walk. And as we were coming up the street, as if we were soldiers, singing, "We are some Dunning Street boys," you know, as if we'd been out on a real adventure. And we used to hit these frogs and tadpoles, and it was all learning. You saw what happened to them, you know, bring them up, put them in the yard. A couple of years after, you'd see frogs jumping about, and they'd been tadpoles, you know. But things like that was an interesting, and you made your own leisure. We couldn't afford to buy things. Christmas was Christmas, and that was when you got stuff that was maybe made of wood and things like that.
Did you get an annual holiday with your father?
Well, we were looking up that way because an aunt of mine, they had a cottage up in Weardale, Weirhead or Weardale, St John's Chapel Way, you know. And we got a month's holiday then. So the middle fortnight of that holiday, we used to go up and get the hire this cottage. Well, it was loaned to us free because it was friends of a relation. And we used to go up to Weardale. And I think we're the only ones in the street that got that holiday, you know. The others didn't, I don't think. They were pretty slums, you know, it's a pity. But workers, I mean, they all got, some went to foundries and errand boys. I started work when I was, because this was when I was 13 and a half, I mean, where it was just my sister and my dad, and with not having the, you know, a mum, used to go and make what you could yourself. And I started errand boy at about 13. Well, I left school at 14 and a half then, like. Errand boys' jobs on a Saturday, pushing a barrow. First of all, they used to take the brown loaves at a label them all in the bakery, label them, put them in a big tea chest with the lid on, put them on the barrow, take them to a Havelock cafe or somewhere like that, a big cafe, deliver them. Pardon me. And a long-distance job. Then, later on...
Who did you work for as an errand boy?
Eggleshaws. It was an old firm. And there was Earnshaws and Eggleshaws, but Eggleshaws was the one I worked for.
How much did you get for that job?
Oh, I can't think now, but it wouldn't be more than a couple of shillings, you know, at the time. And it was my money, but it was always... With me, I was always mortgaged when I got... There was an old woman lived in our street. I used to borrow sixpence off from her every Thursday for to go to the pictures or something like that. I used to borrow sixpence off her. Pay her the next week. Well, her money, her tanner was never her own. It was almost mine, you know. But she used to lend it. I used to give it back just to spend me money out. Got the pictures for Penny up the avenue. And... one pillar used to pay, the others used to dodge underneath or something like that, you know. The picture house up the street, it was called the Ranch, because there was always cowboy pictures on, up the top of the street, they called it the Ranch. And we used to go, there could be a queue on, you know, you get in the queue. But when there was no queue on, there was nobody there. About maybe three or four of us. One used to pay to go in, and he used to go straight through, past the screen to the toilet, and you know, one of those bins that used to open out and stopped, you know, they used to just empty it, because you know, all like that, and just used to drop it in the rubbish. Well, it only needed a piece of clothes peg to open it. One fella got in, pushed it shut, he jumped out, and then another fella got in, he jumped out, and so only one of us had paid. Until the checker inside had got wise to us, and if you walk straight through the toilet when you come in, he used to follow you, so he used to go in and sit for a few minutes, go down, little things like that. Well, but I mean, it was all phone and no violence. Policeman, if you did anything wrong, your mother would tell, you know, threatened, because there was a local, he was there, that you got to know personally, your local Bobby. And if you were playing football in the street, you saw the policeman come, used to run like devil in the house, like. And if he saw you and he thought you'd done wrong, he just used to hit you with his white glove like that, give you a slap, and you respected it, you know.
What was discipline like in your home?
Well, my home was all right. I think it was my mother, from what I heard, well, I mean, I was 8 when she died, but she was a bit temperamental, but she was very loving, you know. But my father, once I can remember him really... I went into bed. He'd been looking for me. And I wouldn't care. I was round at this family's, with eventually practically adopted us. I was round there and I was out late. And he came in, but I was in bed. And I was awake, like, and I thought he wouldn't. And he came in and he just gave us a good shaking, because he thought something could happen to us, you know. But apart from that, there was not much. No. I don't think there was needed, you know. Even up the street, to these others, they used to shout at each other, more shouting than anything else, you know. Seldom you saw it, but if you saw a little, it was always as small as if they were screaming or crying, they used to roll up the backsides. That was it. But apart from, I don't think there was much cruelty, not where we were, anyway. Man, there was much pity. You could pity a lot of them, you know, for the way they were. A lot of vermin, school, we just talked about that. The other day, the last time I was, well, the other day to the wife and my sister talked about the other day, one the other week when I was up there, and used to come home from school, and the first thing your sister or your mother to do, get your dinner, and then kneel down, small toes, comb out, comb your hair, used to be with ringworms, and I mean, I think we were clean, but you used to catch it from others that couldn't afford the hygiene, the soap, thing like that.
And did you like school life?
Oh, well, I liked it a lot, but there was a bit of a bullying there. Gangways, you know, there used to be a few in a gang getting round and picking on to, you see the little ones, I was picking on to the big ones, and I think I was one of them at the time, tall, like, and skitcher, and I had buck teeth, and that was another thing, the curse of colours, Ernie Buck and things like that. Things like that upset us, but it didn't do us, it didn't do for any real hurt at all. It was just one of these things, you know. But there's... No, I'm not sure I enjoyed my school, right, because it was Cain and that, you know, the Cain was bad. I mean, you couldn't argue with a teacher, and if he had an influence, the Cain you there, he would cane you right on the end of your fingers, you know, and push it down, and I've seen some of them going back, trying not to cry, but terrible pain, you know, with a Cain. There's only one fella called Gordon Hymers, I think he got killed beginning of the war. He was the dunce of the class, and I mean, there was about 50 in the class then, you know. The dunce, quiet and everything, took all of his punishment, and pain, he used to just, if he got the cane, he was all getting the cane, and he was just unable to do the lessons and things like that. Always getting the cane, and he just used to walk away like that. No feeling at all, whereas all the brave fellows, you know, used to be walking, trying to hide the tears. And I've often thought of that. He was always caned at school, never bothered, he didn't brag about it, he went back to his seat. And I always remember, he was one of the first ones, but before I was got called up, he was the first one that I'd heard of that got killed in the army. The young fellow, you know.
Did you have examinations to sit at school, qualifications to try?
Well, we had, but I didn't get... You see, they used to, in Common Terror School especially, there's where I went, it was a lot of well-to-do people. A lot of Jews at that area, lived in that area. As a matter of fact, there were so many Jews that they were allowed, when we used to go to school on the morning prayers, the Jews were excused, I'm sure they used to come in 10 minutes after us. Right, before they went, we had prayers again. The Jews went first. And as regarding exams, now at the time, the Bede School was the place to go to here, wasn't it? There was such a thing as passing, you know, as different ones did, you know. And there was also, if you failed, you could buy in. Well, we couldn't, you know, but a lot of the well-to-do ones, if it didn't pass, just paid and got through. Now, but there were some notable characters at that school. I don't know whether you do you belong around this way at all? No. Well, this one, one of them was the real scholar in our class. It was a fellow called Frank Cawes, Cawes, and he's dead now. He ended up head of the banks in here. You know, he's a real scholar, and like so Bergs, Bermans. Well, these Jews one. They all had businesses, you know, and.
Was it, did it cause any difficult, any racial or difficult with
no,
the Jews?
No, not really, but I think the Jews kept themselves, but there was no poison about them, you know, not that way, but they seemed as if all my sort of type used to be all running about the yard, and if it was cold, squishing the corner, keep yourself warm and things like that, you know. And the Jews used to be the groups out the road, but I don't think there's no violence or anything like that. Just didn't allow it.
Did your father serve in the First World War?
Yes, he was in. I think he was in the service, the RSC, and Bob Taylor, and he was. What was I going to say? He was in places like that. He talked about was Salonika. Still only get it, which is Greece and places like that. But didn't get a lot to talk about his army, you know, Korea. We had photos of him and CP photos with my mother.
You said you left school at 14 and
14 and a half, yeah. Well, it should have been 14, but my birthday was in January. I couldn't leave in the summer then, so I had to go till Christmas, I think it was. Something like that. Christmas rather good, the summer, that's right.
Had you got involved with the church at all as a young child?
Yeah, well, I was being, that's something now, I forgot about that. I was in the, me brother, the one we can't get in touch with now, he was top boy in the choir, St. Peter's, but not the St. Peter's that's there now, there was two St. Peter's. This one, was in the town centre and it was pulled down. I was in the corner of Cumberland Street. Anyway, I was in the, he was top boy and he left and I followed on and I was top boy for a while. We used to get top boy, if you're ordinary, you used to get a tanner a month, shilling a month, and I was top boy and used to get half a crown.
And what was a top boy?
Top boy, I was top of the choir as being the best singer, you know. And that's why the best singer, that was it, you know.
Is this a CV?
CV. CV, but it was actually not Roman Catholic Church, Holy Catholic Church. And we got communion in that, CV, you know. And we used to go to church. Sundays three times a day, three times if there was an afternoon service, you know. Or if I wasn't at afternoon service, I was at Sunday school. Till me boys cracked at about 15 off. And that was when it was a great excuse for me to get out of it. Because I wanted to be out then at that age, you see. And the choir master told us to, he knew me voice was going. I come back in the first time, I says, yeah, but I didn't ever go back.
Did you get involved with Church Lads Brigade?
No, the first thing I was in was the army, I think. Nothing like that. My cousins did, you know, the war, something like that.
you'd leave school at 14 and a half. Where did you start your first job?
Oh, well, my first job was, I'd been to Eggleshaw's, and my first job, incidentally, when I was, before I left school, I was always keen, liked horses. And there was a haulage contractors in our street. And I used to come from school, into the house, put all clothes on and go up and help with the horse, with the draft horses. And at one part of my life, I'm not sure, wasn't the first job, it was later on, I got a job driving the horses, a chain horse that used to be added to the front of big loads and that. I was chain horse boy. The trains used to bring the plates of iron plates in for the shipyards in Sunderland, and from the Millfield station, the railway station, that would go right up a bank like that, carry them up. So the horses that were actually pulling the wagons with the plates on couldn't do it themselves. So I used to have to hitch my horse on the front, take it up to the top of the hill, to one of the streets, loose it off, because from then on it was downhill right to the shipyard. I had to go back for the next one. But I think my first one was Piper's the Grocers, a high class grocers in Homeside. And I was warehouse come errand boy there. And that was one of the heaviest errand boys jobs. It was a great big barn. I used to be delivering groceries in, right up to the top end, the high barns and that, all that way. And it was a tiring job, but still, you did it and never thought. And from there on, they used to pay you off then when you were 16, but when it came to needing a bigger stamp, you know, pay you off. So I went from there to a butcher's, and I got on butchering as well, just for another pure year, and that was it, you know.
How much were you paid when you had this first job?
Well, I don't think it would be, if I can remember right, I don't think it would be more than, you see, going by 7 bob a week in army, I think it was about 5 bob or something like that, you know.
What hours did you work?
From 8:30 in the grossest to, all depends. You got your work done, but you could put it 6 o'clock was supposed to be there till. But if you were any longer, well, you didn't get paid. You still had to finish your job, you know. and the butcher's one. I used to work a bit longer after closing time for cutting meat and that, and making sausage, and which you had to by hand, you know, the machine and that. And then I went to the stables. I used to look after the, help to look after the horses, but then I got a job there, as I was saying, as chain horse. But there was one time before that, I used to have a pony, you know, this guy was given this pony and a flat cart, and I used to go delivering the free meals. There was a headquarters in, say, Tatum Street, where they cooked the meals, and then they carried out these in these cans, put them on, and you used to take them to different schools. These insulated cans, take them to different schools while they're fed, and then go back for the empties, you know, deliver the free meals for the poor kids that used to depend upon the free school meals. I'd deliver them. And what kind of thing? Yeah.
So how old were you when you were doing this?
I remember it was about 17 or something like that. Because when it came to 18, I was out of work again because of the stamps situation again. You know, they didn't say it one day, but the one, I think it was 18 then. But round about then it was. But eventually, I was on the dole for a while, but not for long. But eventually, that was it, and from the dole, I was sent down to Birmingham on one of these schemes. They were preparing for the war because the German munition factories. I was sent down there to train. They're guaranteed to turn you out as a semi-skilled machinist. I was on like a caps and lace and drills and things like that, making aluminium rivets for the planes, you know, and things like that. Well, during the time when I was away, that was when war, what day was war broke out. I was down Birmingham then, and I didn't finish me. I was supposed to be there 26 weeks. I think I was there about 13 weeks. Did half the course, and I thought eventually I'm going to be called up. So I went back home. Then I started. You see, before my story, before I went to work, I didn't like the idea of taking a job from my father if I could help it, for all he employed the drivers and things like that, being the foreman. But when I went this time...
So the stables you were working for was the brewery stable?
There was this brewery where I lived at the bottom of the street, but this other brewery stables was just further up. These was just, they had half a dozen wagons and vans. These were horses, you see. But anyway, afterwards I came back to this... came back home, and my father offered us a job, because I knew eventually I would be conscripted, and I took it on, and I was there till I was called up. But I knew then I would be able to get my job back when I came. You say you could demand your job, you could get your job back. And I was there till I was called up in April 18th, 1940.
But when the outcome of war... Did people know that war was coming? Could you see war coming in those days, September?
Great. Well, it was all about Hitler. And at school, I remember at school we used to teach us. I mean, not that they were terribly interested, but they used to try and glorify it. That you're right. You think yourself lucky, and you haven't got dictators. And then that was mentioned then, like Mussolini. He was mentioned before Hitler. At least you have a royal family, a king, you know, kingdom. And that, so that was before I left school, I was taught of it then. And then, of course, the Hitler and all them sort of things, with Nazis and one thing and another. I mean, you didn't take a great lot of notice of it, but what was it? I believe they took the likes of Poland and that over, and then, and that was sort of...
Were you looking forward to going into the army?
Well, it was a queer thing. I wasn't sure of it, but I was keen for the change, you know, to get out, to get somewhere. sort of making a man of you sort of style, you know. And I was 20. And when I did get in to finish, it was hard. I mean, square pushing and things like that, because we only had 6 weeks actual training at Spennymoor, where I went. 6 weeks. And there was key, you know, going in the dirt, you know, you had everything at the double time.
Can we just leave that for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
When you came to join the army itself,
yeah,
what was the process of actually being called up and joining?
Oh, well, I remember I got a letter, and I was told to report to the YMCA, which was in Sunderland at where the Victoria Hall building was. It's the building's still there. I had to report there. And you just went to somebody. There wasn't any, to me, he was just an ordinary civilian, but he looked like ex-army, but he was in civilian clothes. And he asked us a lot of questions and that, and told us to stand up and walk over there. And then he says, oh, yes, he says, and he's writing things down. He says something, or words to this effect, that, oh, you'd be all right for to get yourself to, for you, for the guard, as a guardsman. And I also remember that when I got my papers, it was for the DLI, and I always told people then, oh, I was going to be a guardsman, but I ended up being a little guardsman, which they used to call them then, the little guardsman.